Welcome to the Behavioral Health Business Perspectives Podcast. I'm Laura Lovett, editor of Behavioral Health Business, your go-to source for behavioral health news and insights. Recently, the federal government has been pushing for more integration between physical and behavioral health providers. While many in the behavioral health and primary care space are still working out a roadmap for future integration, Massachusetts-based Innovive Health has been doing this type of work for years. Innovive is a home health provider that caters to individuals with serious mental illness. The goal of the company is to keep high acuity and high-risk patients at home and out of the hospital. The company's staff, which is primarily made up of registered nurses, are trained to care for patients with serious mental illness and other chronic care conditions. It partners with Medicaid and accountable care organizations to provide its services and aims to help curb the cost of care by avoiding hospitalizations. I sat down with Innovive CEO Joe McDonough to talk about integration, Medicaid, and the future of behavioral health. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, Laura, it's certainly wonderful to speak to you again. Thank you for inviting me.
Great. Well, I'd love to dig into some of these really hot topics today. You know, we're seeing the federal government really push for an integration of physical and behavioral health care. How do you foresee those changes really changing the future of healthcare?
Well, I think it's a long time coming, and I'm very grateful that the federal government and their policymakers are looking at our types of patients as, you know, from a whole patient perspective. And I think that this pilot model, the innovation of behavioral health model that the federal government is proposing, I think is a wonderful step in the right direction. You know, we think any model that supports community-based behavioral health practices and really looks at a patient's behavioral health as well as their substance abuse issues, and frankly, as well as their physical issues, because you have to look at the whole person. I think one of the central tenets of this model is that they're looking at combining a patient's behavioral health issues and looking at their medical issues and really looking at the whole person and treating them as such. You know, oftentimes these patients, you know, could be diagnosed with schizophrenia, but they also may have a concurrent diagnosis of diabetes. And you really have to look at them as the whole person and integrate all the providers. You know, oftentimes these patients may have a primary care physician, a diabetic specialist, as well as a psychiatrist. And the more integration, you know, the better the outcomes are going to be for this population. Right now, the care environment for these patients is incredibly fragmented. And oftentimes the psychiatrist and the primary care physician are not talking. And so I think this is a really welcome step in the right direction from the federal government.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you touched on outcomes a little bit. It would be great to sort of dive into that. What do you see in terms of the difference in outcomes when integrated care is happening, especially in that serious mental illness population?
Well, I think one of the things that everyone, I believe, needs to focus on for this population is the community, right? Mm-hmm. Really looking at these patients in the lowest cost care environment where they live. I mean, there's so much focus, and traditionally it's been so much focus on the hospital as sort of the starting point for these patients. But really, we look at, and I believe that really everybody should look at the hospital as the failure point. You know, the best way to take care of these patients is in the community and in their own homes. And the fact that the federal government is really focusing on that, I think, as I stated earlier, I think that's a wonderful step in the right direction because, you know, hospitalizations are so costly. In Massachusetts, for instance, the average hospitalization time for these types of patients is 11.3 days, which costs the state over $38,000 for each hospitalization. And it's not uncommon for these patients when they're not being treated by any community services such as home health care, which is what I provide, for them to have 10 to 12 hospitalizations per year, which is a tremendous cost on state Medicaid systems.
Yeah, you know, now Innovive has really been one of the pioneers of this kind of physical health and behavioral health integration. What are some of the lessons learned from doing this model for some time?
Well, I think the lessons learned is that you can really get good outcomes by really defragmenting the system. And as I said earlier, just getting all of the stakeholders on the same page. For instance, what we do when we admit patients is we communicate with the psychiatrist, we'll communicate with any kind of specialist that is working with the patients, as well as their primary care physician. And oftentimes patients could have case managers with the Department of Mental Health, or they could have case managers with an ACO that they're working with. And we really make sure that we get everybody on the same page. Everybody knows what medications these patients are taking, and everybody is agreeing on the treatment plan. Because, you know, getting everyone to work together and to create the most optimal outcomes, you know, and I stated earlier, it's the cost, right? So these patients are tremendously costly to the system. But really, when you work with these patients, every time they're hospitalized or every time they have to go into the ER, it is tremendously traumatic for these patients. So there's a huge human toll. And from, you know, a quality of life perspective, keeping these patients in the community and providing them these supports is tremendously, you know, really changes their quality of life. But also just from a cost perspective, in Massachusetts, for instance, and it's very similar in Colorado as well, each ER visit costs $3,500. And oftentimes these patients are going to the ERs multiple times. So it is very costly for the state, and really, you know, without community services in place like home health care, everybody in the whole continuum is losing.
Yeah. And actually, I wanted to dive into that home health care model because it's a little bit different than we typically see in behavioral health. But I know Innovi has been doing it for quite a while. You know, how can that model help address some of those behavioral health needs? And how can it also help keep costs down?
Well, we estimate so. What we do is we send nurses out to work with patients on a daily basis for most of our patients. I mean, some patients we may see once or twice a week if they don't need much services or they have supports at home. But oftentimes our patients, you know, we're talking about really the 3% of the patients that drive 50% of the costs. So oftentimes our patients need much more, you know, they have much more utilization of services. So we'll send nurses out to assess the patient in their home. And one of the things, frankly, we look at is social determinants. We look at, you know, do they have a safe environment? Do they have food insecurity? You know, do they have electricity in some cases, right? You know, if a patient has insulin, we want to make sure that they're able to refrigerate the insulin appropriately. And so we work with these clients, and oftentimes they're on 10 to 15 different medications, which, you know, for you or I would be impossible to manage. But for somebody with that is cognitively compromised, it's impossible. And these patients have tremendously poor outcomes without, you know, really that type of assistance within the home. So one of the first things that our nurses do is they'll go in there, they will reconcile all the medications. And again, they will reach out to all the providers that are involved in the patient's care and get everybody on the same page to be able to formulate a treatment plan to create optimal outcomes. And as I stated before, it's really helpful for the patients, you know, to have that support where the nurse is going in on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You know, it's come up a lot. How do we, you know, retain workforce? Do you find that, you know, upskilling, I know, has become kind of one of the terms, but giving folks educational opportunities has really worked for you?
Yes, giving folks educational opportunities has worked for us, but as well, we really focus a lot on culture. We pay attention to the needs of our workforce. For instance, you know, I'm a nurse. I probably have conducted over 20,000 patient visits myself. During the COVID-19 crisis, when we had our first COVID-19 patient, you know, everybody at that time was really worried about, you know, what could happen when you see a COVID-19 patient. And so, you know, really to show my staff that as the CEO, you know, I was the one that conducted the first patient visit with our first COVID-19 patient to show the staff that it was okay. And that I would never put them in a position that I wouldn't put myself in, you know, before that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's really interesting. I wanted to talk, I know you touched on Medicaid before, but I wanted to go back to that. Innovive works a lot with the Medicaid population. What trends are you seeing in Medicaid that could really enable this in the future? And, you know, is it going to be different in every state? What do we kind of foresee there?
Well, I think it's different in every state, but I think states are waking up to the fact that they have, you know, as I stated earlier, they have the 3% of the population that's driving 50% of the costs. I think the COVID-19 crisis has only worsened the situation. And for instance, Massachusetts, even though it has a lot of services available, they have an average of 450 to 500 patients that are boarding in the ERs every day because there's not enough hospital beds. And that's costing the state hundreds of millions of dollars. And that situation has that's replicating itself all throughout the country. And as I stated earlier, the hospital is the failure point for these patients. And I think states are now waking up to the fact that they have to start focusing on more community-based services. And again, I'm glad that the federal government is looking in that direction as well.
Do you see Medicaid really going towards value-based care? And could that look different in every state? What could that look like?
Well, I certainly think every state manages things a little bit differently, but I think there's a huge value-based proposition, for us. So I certainly hope so, and we're currently working with Massachusetts to, for a possible value-based system. I think it makes sense. I think there's tremendous value in having providers have incentives to keep these patients at home and make sure they have the optimal outcomes. So I certainly hope so.
Yeah, and I know Innovive expanded to its second state last April, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Does the company plan to continue expansion, and what could that expansion plan look like? You know, do you foresee it as M&A, de novo growth? What do you kind of see for that?
Well, it could be M&A, it could be de novo. We're certainly looking at both, and we could be doing both. We are in discussions with several states at the moment to expand to, and I'm hopefully we'll have more news coming soon on that. But it really is, it's hard for us to do an M&A because other than Connecticut right now, there's really not many states doing what we do. And so for us, it probably would be de novo for most situations, but we'll see what happens. But I just want to restate as well that there's a huge need, and there's a huge need across the country, right? We're in two states now, but there's a huge need in all 48 states. And a lot of the accountable care organizations that are now managing Medicaid are realizing that they need a company like Innovive to help them with their patients. So we're hoping to expand quite rapidly over the next few years.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One other thing I wanted to ask you about, I know you mentioned EMRs before. I know a lot of behavioral health providers are kind of lagging when it comes to technology. How do you see tech sort of working to sort of promote care, and where do you see it fitting into your business model?
Well, I think technology is going to play a huge part going forward. For instance, my company, we do over 20,000 patient visits per week, right? So, if we were to partner with an ACO to do data sharing, for instance, imagine if we could get, 200,000 data points per week on a population that really nobody understands once they're discharged from the hospital. I think we could use that data to really, create predictive algorithms to see what drives a patient's negative outcome. For instance, if we were able to, look at certain symptom clusters and be able to predict that a patient could either go to the ER or potentially be hospitalized, and we're able to put together a protocol, that stops that event from happening, that would improve a patient's quality of life tremendously, as well as really contain costs. So, we're really excited about using technology. We're totally cloud-based as an agency. When COVID-19 happened, we were able to seamlessly integrate and have all of our clinicians and staff work from home. So we think that technology can play a huge part and really making these behavioral health patients, making their lives a lot better.
Yeah, and I would think that, some of the outcomes data you were talking about could also help with maybe that value-based care future.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that right now, one of my frustrations is that we work with many accountable care organizations in Massachusetts, but there's no data sharing. So there's no seamless integration of a patient's experience throughout the care continuum. And we think that's a tremendous value that we could provide any ACO or state government Medicaid program. We could be really the eyes and ears in the community and really head off any issues before they become issues and save, states and ACOs, a lot of money and provide extreme value to the patient's experience as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So almost like a part in preventative care too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, in this population, primary care is woefully deficient. For instance, in Massachusetts, a patient may have, two primary care appointments twice a year, and they're 15 minutes each. And a lot of our patients are poor historians, or they have symptoms that make them not think that their medical issues are as serious as they are. And so we think that home health, for instance, utilizing nurse practitioners in the home and utilizing technology such as Zoom to bring different providers together within the home, to provide case conferences and be able to really formulate treatment plans that can be iterated on very quickly, you know, to create better outcomes and a better quality of life for our patients.
That's so interesting to hear about future looking, what could be used. This was so interesting. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you, Laura, for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
That does it for this episode of Behavioral Health Business Perspective Podcast. I'm Laura Lovett with Aging Media, a WTWH media company. Thank you for listening.